Hey, welcome to The Weekend. It's time for Group Chat, the place where everyone comes together to talk all things pop culture, whether it's music.
Yeah, Beyonce has 11 nominations.
I think that's aggressive.
including album of the year.
I am happy that she is getting some play.
Mm-hmm. Movies and TV.
In comedy, like, we had memes, we had GIFs, we had people being Rickrolled, we had That's What She Said, we had, you know, like, we had all that stuff. So I think it's also just
it's
where
like
we are in
part
time.
Part of the trend, yeah.
How do you know when to move on? How do you know when something's stale?
How long do we do Chuck Norris jokes for?
Or sports moments that have everyone talking.
If you're watching a television show and somebody's wearing a Bills jersey, like, they're going to notice that and zoom in on that Bills jersey and be like, I like this show, I like these characters. Somebody who doesn't really necessarily care about the Bills, or maybe they follow a different team, they're not going to see that, they're not going to have that same connection, because their perceptual ability is just, it's a different set of references.
Group Chat brings you all the pop culture action with sharp insight, fun debates, and a whole lot of laughter. Coming up right after this.
Hello and welcome to Group Chat. I'm your host, Bentley, and today I'm excited to welcome Meg Howe, new member of the chat, owner of Alice Ever After Books, welcoming back Corey McCants, performer and host of Buffalo Toronto Public Media's digital series Compact History and Compact Civics, who is also an educator in the community, and Dr. Naila Ansari-Cotillo. She's a professor at Buff State, a choreographer, a performing artist, and also co-founder of Ansari Saxon Productions. So welcome back. So today on Group Chat, we're basically hosting the world's largest book club. We're starting young with how kids are falling back in love with books and how pop culture is making reading cool again. And later I'll chat with Michael Threets, the librarian and now host of Reading Rainbow, about how to keep that spark alive beyond the screen. You don't even know the level of excitement I have.
Yes, Reading Rainbow coming back.
I know. Mm-hmm. Then we're diving straight into book talk, book clubs, and the return of the hot reader era, plus how today's favorite novels are turning into tomorrow's streaming hits. So what's everybody talking about in their group chats? Naila?
literally everything and nothing at the same time, because everyone's trying to get away from reality in life. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's a family chat of make sure you go vote from mom and mother-in-law in the chat and do all of those things while also being like, are you guys having fun? Love you. Great day today. And just like sending random pictures. So it's been a balance and funny memes. That's always happening.
Always.
You got to bring that joy in somehow, you know. Mm-hmm. Meg, how about you?
I mean, I'm in carpool land, so my group chats are like, on the way. Okay, I'm here. Okay, now we're dropping off. Okay, I got the kids. They just came in the door. Did you see them? Followed by memes of like why we're late. So it's just a long thread of carpool updates from everybody.
I'm feeling validated right
now. It's not the cool mom group chat that I thought I might have, but here we are.
It's the reality.
It's the reality, yes.
Well, because you see all of these moms on Instagram that are like doing everything perfectly and you're just like, I can't even make it on time.
Yeah.
I'm probably embarrassing because I don't have my makeup done and whatever. Yes. Corey, how about you?
My group chats are always very different, but I think my role is consistent in it. I think right now, I have like me and my boys, we have like a filmmakers group chat where we are talking about films and stuff, and I'm constantly like, yo, we got to do this, look at this thing, you know, and that like helps motivate me. So I'm doing that. The family chat is always my oldest brother sending random stuff, just like, remember 23 years ago when this happened? Remember when Corey was a baby and this happened? And so he keeps that one alive. But, you know, I guess it's just kind of finding how you play your role in each different one. Because in my friends, I feel like I take the role of like the older sibling-ish kind of, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then in my sibling one, you can tell how much I'm the baby. So, you know, just I'm a role player, falling in where I get in, you know?
That mirrors a lot what you're doing in life too, and on Instagram.
You're right. Well, I'm trying to,
I'm loving your content.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
Check out Corey's Instagram.
Right.
Corey, what is your Instagram?
By the way, if you wanted to follow it, it's Corey V. You can check me out on Instagram, man. I'm out there.
It's very inspirational. Again, something we need right now.
So. Yes.
You know, we were talking about some positive things today that's happening as we are, you know, there's programs that are strained, you know, children's literacy is a big topic right now. Mm-hmm. But there are positive things happening. I know, Corey, you're on the ground. You're in the trenches. You're an educator. What right. ages do you work with?
So the school is pre-K through 8.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm mainly with like 4 through 8.
Yeah.
But it is the trenches. You said it right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So obviously screens are a thing. Mm-hmm. And how kids are reading is changing. So are you seeing it... How are books falling into play? Are they reading differently? Are they reading, or is it more of a struggle to get kids to read?
Yeah. I think there was definitely a dip where it seemed like no kids were reading or, you know, knew how to at strong levels. It was like rare to find someone reading above grade level, and you'd be lucky if you had most kids at grade level. But it does seem like there's, at least in my opinion, there's like a sway coming to where... If you were to ask a kid what their favorite book was, they'd have an answer, which I feel like 4 years ago, they wouldn't, you know? And obviously, there was a really big thing happening like 4 or 5 years ago, the whole COVID thing. Mm-hmm. And I think it caused for screens to be way more needed. Mm-hmm. And for kids that were in the, you know, second grade, like that was all they knew. But maybe the pendulum is swinging back and kids are getting into it. Like at my school right now, we have a book vending machine. Mm-hmm. And so... You know, when you tailor something as like it's a reward, like, oh, you did great. You get to earn a book, you know, that gets kids like, oh, you know, making them want to do it as opposed to, oh, you were loud in lunch. You can go sit over here and read a book. Like, you don't want to make a book a punishment.
Yeah.
You want to make it a reward. And I think those kind of strategies are helping kids see books as like that escape. You know, when we talk about escapism into seeing what you want. And so it does seem like it's picking back up. You know, I'm always optimistic.
Yes,
but
I know.
I'm optimistic about it.
Yeah.
That, you know, maybe we're turning a corner here and it's getting better.
Yeah. Meg, now your store, Alice Ever After Books, I love.
Thanks.
And it's focused on children's books.
Mm-hmm.
But you also do a lot of interactive events there. Mm-hmm. You curate your book selection.
We do.
What are you seeing? And where does your store fall into this? So what was the mission of your store?
Before we opened, I was an educator for 15 years. Mm-hmm. And I was kindergarten through fifth grade. I did special education for a few years. So I saw a lot of the stuff. I saw more from my kiddo, like screens becoming more of a part, but I didn't experience that as much. But my role as a teacher was always like helping kids find books where they could see themselves. You know, there's this great literature about books as windows and mirrors and sliding glass doors that you can see yourself. Mm-hmm. You can see somebody else's world. You can step into somebody else's world.
Yeah.
That was my mission as a teacher. And it is exactly the same as a bookstore. We want to make sure that any kiddo or grown up who comes in can find themselves in a book in our store. Oftentimes we have high school groups that come in and do field trips, and I tell them that's our mission. And then I say, now you need to test me. Like, go see if I did what my job is and see if you can find yourself in a book. And it's so fascinating to see how kids pick something that maybe it's not just the way a person looks
Absolutely.
In the book, but
yes.
they see the life that that character is leading or an interest that character has. What you see from a person isn't necessarily what they're connecting to in a book.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are really focused on not just our community, like it's so big, our community, but we're working a lot with schools right now. And actually, this school started this great program where instead of just buying books from us for their library, they bought sets of books so that kids could do book clubs.
Oh,
and so you can check
awesome.
Out from the library a bag of books, and then you and your friends can like on the weekend meet
wow.
and read a book and talk about it. And they were like, can you help curate like 6 or 7 bags of books with different experiences that kids could all see themselves? And that was so fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So it seems like by what you're both saying, it's important to engage kids in a different way to promote reading and
yeah.
make it fun so they'll
Absolutely.
Do it on their own.
Yes, yes.
You know, which is, we're going to be talking about Reading Rainbow, and that was always, historically, that was always engaging. And now there's another level in the show where there's activities and it's very interactive.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I do see that in the events that you have
yes.
at your bookstore of, you know, bringing in special readers or just engaging activities.
Yeah.
Now, Nayeli, you often talk about, I know you always somehow try to bring in pop culture into your classes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's how I get my students to read and like participate is I always, you have to be relevant to what they're experiencing now.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes like when you bring in like historical texts, it's difficult for them to kind of even grasp what you're talking about because they may have learned it
it's
or may have not
world.
Learned it.
Yeah.
It's very different. So I've had to change my teaching strategies because the typical, like, here's an assignment, read it, does not work.
No.
anymore, especially with AI, because they can go quickly figure out how to like get a synopsis of something, which was more, I forget what we used to have back
then. Spark notes.
We had Spark notes.
We still had to read it.
We still had to read it. Because that wasn't just, giving you enough. This one will give you full descriptions of everything.
And they can speak it to you. So you don't even got to read the text.
Exactly. But it's not helping them like think and be creative. And I think, you know, we have to go more into the creative side and like the magical world of reading.
Meg, do you find that engaging the students or engaging the people that come in to buy books, is there ever like certain authors that they're drawn to, or does a celebrity author draw, you know, people in?
That's so interesting, because when we first opened, I was sort of like, Channing Tatum wrote a book that was like Tutu Princess or whatever, and I was like, oh, I guess people will buy it, and nobody bought it. And I think that there are people buying it, but I feel like the people who are coming into our shop are looking for more of that interactive experience and community. Mm-hmm. They're looking for books that they can't just get on the top 10 list on Amazon. They're looking for that curation and like a book that they can't find anywhere else. We have a big event next week with Dog Man.
Oh, yes.
And
huge.
You know, I know some people don't like the idea of graphic novels because it's not real reading. But as a former like special education teacher and reading specialist, I do give Dave Pilkey all my money because these kids are buying all these books, but like my own kiddo struggled with reading, and he was so motivated to read Dog Man that he would sit with it and try. And then there's this like flip-a-rama page where there are no words, and you just like flip the page to make the characters move, and then it encourages you to make sounds. And it was fun for him. And then as an educator bookseller, I was like, oh, that's a cognitive break for him. And he's getting some movement in there too. Like, this is so developmentally appropriate, Dave Pilkey. Way to go. But we applied to get the character of Dog Man to come to Buffalo for the release party next week. And we sold 200 copies of Dog Man.
That's wonderful.
And we are bringing him to 4 schools in North Buffalo.
Yeah.
Awesome. Like, we have the release party at the store, and people can come and get a picture with Dog Man. But then also, like, we pitched to Scholastic. We're like, we want to bring Dog Man to schools so that kids, even if they can't afford it, they like get to high five Dog Man on their way into school. Yeah. And there's so much enthusiasm around. I mean, that's such a huge one.
Yeah.
But then like celebrities who write books, it's more the parents who are into that kind of thing. Yeah. Like the kids don't really care. It's the Dave Pilkey. It's the Diary of a Wimpy Kid is still selling, you know. We just had a whole display. We had a Taylor Swift Life of a Showgirl display with Taylor Swift, but also like Eloise, old, you know, throwback books. Fancy Nancy was
like,
and then we had do you like K-pop Demon Hunters? You might love these books, you know, so that like connection to pop culture, you know, kids want to know that you're interested in what they're interested in.
It seems like there's a social aspect of this too with these books, is like, you know, it's like if your friend's reading it, then you want to read it.
Yes.
I know if you go back to like Harry Potter, there were studies that Harry Potter increased literacy rates and just kids reading for fun.
Yes.
And Corey, when you're educating, how do you make sure that the kids are seen and what they're doing in reading? Because, you know, I know Meg, you can choose the books that you sell in your store. Yeah. How do you, as an educator for the young kids?
If I'm not doing it on Compact History or Compact Civics, where I have a green screen and can like really make stuff come to life, it's actually not that different. In the past, when I was teaching theater, which, you know, that was like one of my introductions into really teaching, we did Romeo and Juliet, and it was like with my fifth graders, and I really wanted them to understand it. And I know for me, when I saw the Leo DiCaprio version, it was just different. Like, watching it now, I'm like, what is this? But when I was in the fifth grade watching it, I was like, man, like, did you see Benvolio and like all this?
Yeah, you understood it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so we were reading it, and I like gave the character synopsis. And what I did was I went in, it was a lot of work, but I went in and I made a PowerPoint slideshow of each character, but it was like relevant to who they knew. I made it all these different people. And the first thing that one of the girls said to me was like, wait, like the main girl, she's a black girl? And I was like, yeah, if we wanted her to be like, but like they didn't know that. So when I put these characters into play, they're now reading it from a point of view, one, of understanding, like, you got to know who these people are to get it. And when you put these characters that they know there, they read it from that point of view. But now they feel like they really understand it, you know what I mean? Which is so great. I will say, you got to be careful how you do it, because they, like most things, kids can get too into it. Mm. I got in trouble for kids biting their thumb at each other because I explained to them what it meant back then. And a parent came up to me like, excuse me, why is my kid saying she bit her thumb? And I'm like, where are we at right now that I'm getting in trouble because this kid bit their thumb at this kid? But, you know, I was like, that's better than giving them the finger, I guess.
Right.
But that also showed like they were into it. Yeah. They were understanding it.
That's cool.
And so, you know, it was a win. The bite, the thumb, all of it. It was a win.
All right, we're going to keep talking, reading books, and up next, before we do that, I'm talking to Michael Threets. I'm excited. The new host of Reading Rainbow on Group Chat on BTPM NPR.
Introducing Local at 11, a space just for Buffalo Toronto Public Media's best original features, including What's Next, Group Chat, Skin in the Game, and more. Listen to Local at 11 Monday through Friday at 11 a.m. on Buffalo Toronto Public Media NPR.
Hi, Michael.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. Well, I am honored to talk to you today, Michael. Michael Threets, the host of Reading Rainbow. So, Michael, I get the chance to talk to a lot of great people. And I have to tell you that when I told people that I would be talking to you, it was like this total different starstruck face. And that says a lot about you as a host, but also about Reading Rainbow. So, first of all, I want to check in on you because there's been a lot of attention. You've gone viral. It's everywhere on social media. So I want to check in on you and ask you how you're doing. What has this experience been like?
No, I appreciate that. No, I'm so excited for this conversation. I think for me, it's been a lot of overwhelm. I think some people use the word pressure because they think of Reading Rainbow, they think of LeVar Burton, they think of the 21 years that he worked directly on the show. But even though we revive Reading Rainbow, this is not something where I'm taking over. I'm joining the project. I'm a Reading Rainbow kid that he raised. So I'm very overwhelmed with all that you mentioned, all that you described. But I'm just trying to reach more and more readers. I think that's the unfortunate part of where we're at in the world, is that my mom is a high school teacher. And she's so proud and so excited. She's been asking her students what they know about Reading Rainbow. And so many of them are freshmen, which means they're 14, 15 years old, sometimes 13, and they had no idea about Reading Rainbow. It's not something that they were raised with. So for me, I'm just like, you know what? I love LeVar Burton. I love Reading Rainbow. Everything I'm doing is just to pay respect to him because he's one of my ultimate heroes. And so I'm just trying to have as much fun as possible. I'm overwhelmed every single day that ends in the word day, but I'm just embracing everything and having as much fun as possible with this incredible project.
I feel like the generation of parents that watched Reading Rainbow now have kids that are watching, but they may not know anything about the original Reading Rainbow. And that's why I appreciate your energy with this show and how you really meet the kids where they are now, because obviously everything's changing. And it's a critical time right now. So how do you personally, when you're thinking about hosting this show, I know you said you're a LeVar fan and you were a fan of the show. So how do you keep that, but also make it your own? Because you add such a special element to this and there's so many interactive elements. What's important to you for the show going forward?
I think that's why it's so important that Reading Rainbow is not just me. I think so many people think that I'm the sole person who's brought Reading Rainbow back, and I am not at all. I happily joined the project along with every other person. And I think that's what's most important, is that it is a team of producers, of writers, of all these wonderful people, same like Reading Rainbow was way back when, same like Mr. Rogers, same like Big Comfy Couch, Out of the Box, Bill Nye, all these things had more than one person dedicated to empathy, kindness, literacy, and so much more. But for me, I'm not trying to hold myself back. I think that's what I did when we first started. But then I realized, you know what? Let me just talk to them like their library is. Like I'm trying to convince a person that they belong in the library. So I think if I'm doing anything different, it's just, I mean, I think we had the quizzes, we had the interactive questions following alongside the books. But outside of that, we're just trying to make kids and make people know that reading is fun. That's the whole goal. Yes, we want them to learn how to read. We want them to be at reading level. But most of all, we want them to know that books are something that should be fun to be read. It's not a chore. It's not something to mark off your to-do list. It's like, when do I get to read again? When do I get to dive back into No Cats in the Library, back into Tiny Troubles, back into Moohoo, but hanging out with Bell and Woodard, all those sorts of things. So we're just focused on the fun of literacy, of fun of libraries, which is library joy and book joy.
Yeah. You know, I also want to talk about your journey because, as you said, you're a librarian. So that transition from being in a library and then hosting a show. Now, you did have a viral moment, some viral moments on TikTok. So what happened between being a librarian and hosting this show? And what did you have to do to prepare for that?
I've never fully embraced the whole Michael the Librarian moniker of sorts. I think it's very, very funny. I think I'm a big fan of people like Tyler, the Creator, and such, people who don't necessarily have a known last name. But I think Michael Librarian kind of got dropped on me by a library kid. I used to walk around my library every single day before library would open. And oftentimes there would be a grown up and a library kid walking around, I mean, pushing a stroller around. There's a pond right behind the library. It had been a couple of days since they had seen me. And like, I think when I came back to library, the kid was like, "Library guy, it's good to see you." And I think I posted that video on social media and people took library guy and then made it librarian. And they realized I have a name. So they tied it to Michael Librarian. But for me, I'm a librarian. I'm trained in library science. I was a library worker for over 10 years, library aide, library assistant, library associate, children's librarian, marketing librarian, and supervising librarian. And I ended up leaving the library for my mental health, for burnout, for a lot of things going on in my personal life. Just didn't like being alive in the world and was going to make some drastic, some hard decisions. And luckily the kindness, the hope of the world kind of collided with me. And then to my surprise, I'm still here today having this incredible conversation with yourself. And I think it's all thanks to the kindness of internet strangers, people who saw all those stories that I was sharing, saw me talking on and on about library joy, talking about what libraries mean for the community, for every single one of us. They kept on saying, "We want to see this guy with PBS. Maybe this guy can help out with Reading Rainbow." And I think all those various teams and myself saw those incredibly kind comments. And to all of our surprise, we were able to come together and now have me work on social media things with PBS and just promoting public media, but also I'll never get used to it as being the host of Reading Rainbow. Every time I wake up in the morning, I'm just like, "Oh, maybe that was a fun dream. Maybe it's all over. Maybe I'm back to working at the public library." So I will forever miss working for one single public library. I'm actually considering trying to get my credential to be a school librarian. But it's so very cool to be a part of this and just see what it means for libraries across the nation, to know that classrooms, daycare centers, families, loved ones are all watching Reading Rainbow together and just reaching twice as high, being butterflies in the sky.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. I can't help but get choked up hearing you talk. And, you know, I think it's funny that you said try to get your credentials to be a school librarian. I think if there's anybody in the universe that's more qualified for you to be a school librarian, it's you. Why has it been important for you to talk about mental health and also incorporate that into discussions with children and into what you're doing now?
It's so important for me to talk about mental health just because I've struggled with mental health for so much of my life. I'm diagnosed with anxiety, depression, panic disorder, PTSD, and nightmare disorder, amongst some other things. So it just has been a very I'm 35 years old. I know I'm far older than people often think. I'm not old at all, but I'm much older than people think I am. And most of those 35 years have been struggling with various aspects of mental health, even as a kid, not realizing what was going on in my life, not realizing what those struggles were. I think having depression as a child, having panic attacks, anxiety attacks, and not knowing what they were, just thinking that, "Oh, I was having trouble breathing. That's like, I was getting dizzy." But it was most likely a panic attack. So for me, it's something that I didn't get to address most of my life. And it's no fault at all of my grownups. They did all that they could. They helped me. They've gotten me this far. They're the reason that I'm alive, in addition to all those wonderful library people. But for me, working in the library, especially the public library, I saw people who were on their worst, who came into library on their worst days so often. These would be regular people. They're house people, unhoused people, people who were just suffering. And I was their first contact, me and my staff. We would just have conversations with them. We would say, "You're not invisible. I see you. You're here. I'm glad you're here. We're going to do all we can. If you just want me to mind my own business and stop talking to you, it's going to be really hard, but I'll go bother somebody else." But I think just just hearing people's stories, just listening, giving them a chance to tell their own story has always meant so much to me. And that's what talking about mental health does. Me and my friend Blair Amani have a podcast called Thoughts About Feelings. And we ask people all the time, how are you really? Because so often you ask someone, how are you? And it's, oh, I'm good. I'm fine. Or no response. But we want people to say, I'm unhinged. I'm riddled by anxiety. We want to expand on that conversation. That should be the new version of small talk. And I think why it's important for kids is because kids also suffer from all these things. I suffered with mental health as a kid. It's to the extent that I pursued assessments for autism and ADHD. And there are things where I'm just like, you know what? I have questions about my mental health, about my life. I can't have suffered from just all these things as a child, as a teen, as an adult. Maybe I did. I have no idea. That's what I'm learning. I'm on this journey. But I know that kids are also feeling these things. I go to kindergarten classes. I go to first grade, second grade, third grade. And they ask me about anxiety because they see my videos. They ask like how it can help their own anxiety. What can they do for their panic attacks? And I tell them, I am not a professional, but this is what helps me. And then I ask them, what helps you when you're having anxiety, when you're having a panic attack? And they almost always have answers, even if it's, I say the names of my favorite dinosaurs. I talk about Pokemon. I think I did a talk not too long ago and K-pop Demon Hunters had come out and they're like, I sing the K-pop Demon Hunters soundtrack. All these things that you're like, you know what, adults, we think so complicated, so complex about how to deal with these things. And these kids are just like, just talk about dinosaurs, talk about Pokemon. And I think having those conversations just, it puts so much hope and joy on mental health. We often think that mental health is only ever a struggle, but we're supposed to have positive mental health. I think that's something that's forgotten. And the more I talk to kids, the more I talk to adults seriously about mental health, the more I have hope that there is a day where we all can embrace it, where it's okay to not be okay. And that's how we eventually get to being okay.
Well, I respect that on a lot of levels because I think, you know, until recent years, mental health hasn't been talked about, especially in males, especially in certain populations. You know, one of the great things about kids is they're very honest and they're very in the moment and they feel how they feel. And, you know, sometimes as adults, we don't feel okay to do that. So to bring that out in them and those grounding techniques, like you were talking about dinosaurs. So what do you wish someone would have told you when you were a kid and maybe experiencing these things? What would you have wanted or what can you tell grownups that they maybe should be doing for their kids or maybe tricks or ways to incorporate maybe fun things and literacy into mental health?
I wish that more conversations would have been had with me when I was a kid, just about mental health in general, about just feeling a certain way about the majority of people experiencing anxiety and nervousness at some point in their life. I think when I was a kid, mental health was essentially either you were fine, you were supposedly fine, or it was schizophrenia. That was it. Those were the two realms that people who didn't necessarily suffer directly thought about mental health. And I wish that just it would have been more known that you can just talk about mental health in general, to say your mental health is as important as your physical health, that your brain is going to hear some things, that some people have an internal voice, they have an inner monologue, some people don't. So almost like an FAQs as a kid of mental health, just those common questions, those just making it normal is what I would have wished that would have happened. And again, no blame to the adults, the grownups in my life. It just wasn't something that happened because of the stigma that you were referring to. But I always just encourage people just to listen as much as possible. I think our fear, our worry as grownups, as adults, we're supposed to be the ones that have the answers, that have this insight, that have this advice. And we forget how honest kids are, that if we give them a chance to say what's going on in their life, they will happily deliver a TED Talk on mental health to us with just one question. I think we need to give them the opportunity to deliver their TED Talk to say, what's going on in your life? How are you really? To ask more people, how's your mental health? I've asked adults that question in podcast interviews, how's your mental health? And you can just see them kind of be very taken aback because no one's ever asked that question before. I think if you start it when people are a kid, they start to develop an answer and they start to develop an understanding and they know where their base level of mental health is at, and then you can expand from there. I don't think it's a cop-out, but it feels like to me the best thing to do is just have a conversation with your kids, with the people in your life, not to assume that they're suffering, but to give them a chance to know that it's okay if they are suffering, if they are struggling. And then maybe they'll be like, I'm fine. I'm watching my show. I'm reading my book. Can you stop talking to me for a second? I was actually having a good internal monologue already. But just to go from there, I think there's so many. I think we make things so complicated because of what's going on in the world, but some things are much easier to our surprise. And I think the topic of mental health is one of those things that's always been, it should be far easier just to say, I'm okay or I'm not okay. It's every day is different. I think that's part of it too, is so often, especially with kids, we see that they're okay, they're having a good day, and we're like, oh, good. We feel such relief that we don't want to get back into that mud, back into the bog of mental health struggle, that we're almost afraid to approach it again. But it's just like, no, sometimes you're okay one day, you're not okay the next, and back and forth, and you just have to adjust each and every day. And I always talk about Mr. Rogers, looking to the helpers and just be a helper, be a Mr. Rogers helper for them every single day, and just adjust and approach them as need be.
For as much as we have a responsibility to teach kids, we can also learn a lot from them, including a lot of the things you were just saying. There is an idea of libraries and reading being a mirror to children. So they need to see themselves in the stories, or they need to go into a library or a bookstore and find stories that are about them. So how do you bring this into the show, and, you know, including book selections and activity selections? I love the activities you do and the interactive things. So how do you go about making sure that kids can see themselves in Reading Rainbow?
Yeah, you know what? I think that's something that we're intentionally focused on it in bringing Reading Rainbow back to the world. But it's also something that we didn't try to focus on right away directly as much as possible. We more so wanted to just introduce as many books as possible. I think for me to be the host, I think it's if people know who I am, they know how much I care about representation and diversity and belonging in books and libraries. I think me being a tri-racial person, being Black, Mexican, and white, we don't talk about it directly in the show, but it's something that I've talked about publicly online and in library talk, just because I'm so proud of all of my grandparents. I'm so lucky to have grown up with multiple grandparents that I never stop talking about them. I think it just shines through on Reading Rainbow, just in the various guests that we have narrating the stories, that we have doing the activities with the library kids, with me and the library kids, all of us looking different, but being similar, and just having joyful conversations together. And then in the books, and just having trying to create different books to say, hey, these different people wrote the story. They illustrated stories. These are them. These are the books. These books are at the library. They're at bookstores. And I think that's the ultimate way that we can kind of start to show people that they belong in books. Every single person, you in the show, through those books, is by getting them to go to the library. Those are my favorite comments, messages that I've gotten since people have seen the episodes is, oh, I took my kids to the library. They want to know if Michael Librarian is at this library. They want to ask the librarians what books they would read after reading Moohoo, after reading Tiny Troubles, after reading More Than Peach, after reading No Cats in the library. And I think that's where you start to get them to see that they belong in books, that all the access in the world for all sorts of kids. They're always either playing Roblox or they're on YouTube. Now you can go to the library. You can get your own library card. You can become a library card holder. And then they see all these other books that are available to them. They find The Dog Man. They find The Diary of a Wimpy Kid. And they find Jason Reynolds. They find Nick Stone, Jerry Craft, Kelly Yang, Rana Telgemeier, Clarabelle Ortega, all these different books that are written for them from different people, talking about their experiences, their adventures, and not knowing who eventually is going to read this story. But then all these kids, all these people, they read all these stories that they may have first heard about on Reading Rainbow, and they're thrust into these other worlds, and they're readers for life, and they realize, hopefully, they can start to tell their own story. Because I meet so many reluctant readers who are just like, oh, that book's not for me, I don't know about this one. It's like, well, maybe you should write your own story. And then they say, like, I didn't know I could do that. And they start to write. And I think the beautiful thing about writing is once a person starts to write, once they start to delve into their own story, they realize that they need other stories to find the words, to find the connection for their own stories. And they're almost forced into reading to tell their story, and they fall in love with it.
So is it true that you are working on a book, or you may have a book coming out of your own?
I do. I actually have. I'm very lucky to have several books coming out in the next couple of years. I have my first one that I've been waiting years for from Random House Children's Book. It's called I Am So Happy You're Here, A Celebration of Library Joy. This should be here in February 2026. I got to see the very first copy with the illustrator, Lorraine Nam, the other day. It's our book, and I was so very excited. It's the only thing I've been waiting for literal years, and for it to be possibly in libraries and bookstores in the near future, I'm just so excited. It's all about library kids coming to the library and just discovering the library with me as a character of a librarian, or a character loosely based on me, and just saying, here's what's at the library. I'm so happy you're here at the library. Here's all the things you can get with your library card as a library kid, as a library person, and just the whole book is just to convince them that they belong in the library. And I'm just so excited for them to read it and for me to get more copies to give to my grandparents, to my mom and dad, to anyone who will receive the book.
Hey, so many things to be proud of. We are so just grateful to have you on this earth. Yeah. So Reading Rainbow has become this pop culture icon in its own way. And then you are now, you know, in that pop culture realm. How do you feel that pop culture influences reading, especially in kids? Like, you mentioned K-pop Demon Hunter and, you know, some of the other things. Do you see it as a good influence? Because there's also the side of like screen time and some of the things that you were talking about. So how can we use pop culture to influence young readers?
No, it's such a controversial question, but I feel like I'm biased as now, like you said, I'm now part of a pop culture thing, but I've never felt anything was wrong with it. Again, I've encountered so many people who are reluctant readers, either just because they honestly haven't found the right book, or it's because they could have just found out they're autistic, they have ADHD, dyslexia, or they may not know these things, and that's what's going on in their life. I have no idea what the particular reason is, but I know that are people who often struggle trying to find that book to get them hooked on the joy of reading. And I think that's honestly where pop culture comes in. I mean, I've met so many people who are now readers because there are books about Steph Curry, books about Carmelo Anthony. They're like, what? No way. Why did anyone tell me there were books about these people? And their teachers and their school librarians are like, we told you that. Don't lie to this librarian. We told you multiple times. He's just a new person talking to you. But even again, talking about Pokemon, same thing. They're just, when they find out there's Pokemon books, as you can't see all my tattoos, but I'm covered in tattoos. And some of them are Studio Ghibli. So you introduce a Totoro book to kids and they're like, my mom and dad love Totoro. They talk about it all the time. Now I love Totoro. And now there are books about Totoro. That's so cool. And then same thing for Marvel and DC. You introduce Batman and Spider-Man, and there's kids who love Chadwick Boseman and the Black Panther. And they're like, yes, I need to read all these books. There's these adaptations as Miles Morales in these graphic novels, in these chapter books. And they're like, okay, now I'm interested. Now I'll get this book. And being at the library, you get to tell them, and I think this is something that so many grownups forget to do when they visit the library, is they forget that you can borrow more than one book from the library. Yeah. So their kids want these graphic novels. They want to read Dog Man for the 1100th time. Their grownups are like, you gotta pick a new one. And they're like, but I want to read this one. And I try to come in very respectfully and be like, you know what? They can get the Dog Man book, the Magic Treehouse book, and this 4.2 grade level book you want them to get. Yeah. They can get, and I don't tell them that they need to get up to 50. I'm just like, they can get two or three, because they're just like, don't tell them that, because they're going to get 50 every time. And then you're going to grow up like I did, with a mom who ended up taking 100 books out of the library every single time, just taking away all the resources. But I know, I think screen time is a valid concern. I've learned, and I don't have any kids, but I learned talking with friends who do, talking to people at the library, talking with homeschool families, they're going to find ways to have screen time. Most often it's going to happen. So why not encourage them to look to things like Reading Rainbow, to look to things like Miss Rachel, to say Sesame Street has been everyone's favorite street all this time, to watch Mr. Rogers' Joy and Wisdom and Hope all over again, but to then to bring it back to books and say, yes, this is where it's at. This is where you get to dive into Charlotte's Web. You get to read The Bridge to Terabithia, Beverly Cleary, Lewis Sacker's Holes, and the sequel Small Steps. So many people are still reading Holes by Lewis Sacker. I love Holes so much. One of my cats that you may have been hearing, her name is Kissing Cat Barlow, and named after Kissing Kate Barlow. And even now, I think they're considering creating a new TV show based on Holes. And that's something where you can tell these kids, like, hey, look, this show's coming out soon, but it's also based on this book. Let's read this book before you start to watch these episodes. Nice. So I think if it's used right, you can almost use screen time to your advantage to create more and more readers. I mean, there's Star Wars shows. The Hobbit is a TV show. The Hobbit is a book that you can read at almost any age, and you just start bridging back and forth and you're having these conversations, and you never know who will start being just like, hey, all these books I love based on my love of pop culture, this is so cool. I'm sure they're going to write a K-pop Demon Hunters book in the very near future. I would not be surprised at all. And you have all these kids, going to be 1,000 people on the holds list at the library waiting to get the book. And I think both sides of the conversation are totally valid. It should be discussed. We as grown-ups should find solutions to make sure that screen time is as healthy as possible, especially because of cyberbullying and just the toxicity that comes with the internet, which is a dangerous thing to say as the person sometimes called the internet's librarian. I've experienced all sorts of things through it. And I just think that there's so many ways to make people readers, and pop culture just happens to be a very, very fun way to reach all these kids who have every capability and are worthy of being readers.
Yeah. And you can be the positive force on social media. And you know, as you've said, a theme is making reading fun. So, you know, that's, and meeting them where they are. Reading Rainbow started here at Buffalo Toronto Public Media on our PBS station, and we are involved in that. So do you have any experience in this area, or can we look forward to maybe you coming to explore the area?
I don't necessarily know, but it's something that I'm just embracing right now. I'm so proud to be a part of it with you all, with Buffalo Toronto Public Media, with all public media. I'm a big fan. I mean, I have a tattoo of Arthur Reed's library card. So I'm public media through and through. It's what I grew up on. My main screen time was Mr. Rogers, Bob Ross, Dragon Tales, Wishbone, and LeVar Burton, and Reading Rainbow. As my cat is one of the Machine Gun Kitties, she joins us. I'm in it for the long haul, but I'm just so blessed that you all came back together, that we were able to make these four episodes happen. And I'm just so excited that people are watching them together. There are kids who are seeing it. I've actually had a couple of kids come up to me at different libraries and kind of pause and be like, I've seen you before. You're the Rainbow person. So no matter what, I will always just have been blessed to play this small role. Again, I believe like my main heroes are Mr. Rogers, Steve Irwin, Bob Ross, and LeVar Burton, with Dolly Parton a very close fifth. So to do something that all those wholesome people were involved in, which is empathy and kindness and joy and literacy, which is what all that Reading Rainbow seeks to do, I will never get over it. I'll be thankful to have played this role.
Well, thank you so much, Michael. I think, you know, I could talk to you for hours. You are such an inspiration, and I loved talking to the person behind what I see on social media and the screens, because you are so very genuine. And I, you know, especially now, I personally, and I know a lot of people, appreciate everything you're doing, and keep it up. If you don't mind, we're just going to keep checking in with you every once in a while to keep up to date on everything and check in with you.
Please do. No, I love a good mental health check. There are some kids that still do mental health checks on me, and they have no idea what that means. So anytime you can check in, I would love to have conversations and just keep on reminding people to get out there and take care of themselves and to read all the things and to find new ways to ingrain pop culture and so much more, and just keep on following the rainbow and loving their true selves.
It's been an honor. All right. Enjoy the rest of your day, Michael. Thanks again.
All right. You too. Tell your son I said hello.
All right. I will.
Take care.
Take care.
Introducing Local at 11, a space just for Buffalo Toronto Public Media's best original features, including What's Next, Group Chat, Skin in the Game, and more. Listen to Local at 11 Monday through Friday at 11 a.m. on Buffalo Toronto Public Media NPR.
Thanks for joining us again on Group Chat. I'm your host, Bentley, and I'm joined by Meg Howe, the owner of Alice Ever After Books in Buffalo, Corey McCants, performer and host of Buffalo Toronto Public Media's digital series Compact History and Compact Civics, and Dr. Naila Ansari-Cotillo, professor at Buff State, also a choreographer and performing artist, and lots of things. So I am really happy to have this group here because our main topic today, since we talked to Michael Threets of Reading Rainbow, the new host, is literacy. And we talked a lot about it in children and where that goes from there. But what that means today and also in pop culture. I know we talked a little bit about famous authors. Mm-hmm. I think like what you were saying, it's more sometimes the parents that come in. I've also picked up books where I didn't know Jimmy Fallon wrote a Halloween mm-hmm. book. I just picked it up. I picked it up at the library and I'm reading it to my kid and I'm like, wait, Jimmy Fallon wrote this? Yeah. And then I did have to go see Christian Benford from the Bills did a book and it's so cute and it's got such a great message and it was from him having a son and his son always wanting to wear like
stylish safari
but it was such a great message because you know he was funny. I got to see him read it at the library at the Crane Library. Which was wild because I got there like, you know, kind of early and, you know, you've got a 3-year-old with you and we sat down and then, you know, everybody was good. But then you had some of the parents that, you know, were just there to meet a Bills player.
Oh,
and I get like the mama bird in me and I'm like, settle down, let the kids go up there.
Right,
you know?
Not for your date night.
Right. But the story was so cute. But it's basically about how he's trying to put all these like cool clothes on his son and putting like, you know, Jordan's on him. And he's like, no, Dad, I want to wear these light up Skechers. And he had to like, and he had to be like, yeah, you have to be who you want to be. And he like taught that whole lesson around fashion.
That's so cool. I love that.
And you know, that's another way of, as you guys were talking before, just engaging kids to want to be interested in something. So yeah, that's right. You guys did. And then you were selling the book at your store, right?
Yeah, we still have some signed copies. He signed some extra ones for
us. Oh, good, because I wasn't waiting. That line was crazy, and I had a 3-year-old with me who was like, why can't I stay and play at the library? What are all these people? Books have also, are they making a resurgence now for adults or in young adults? I mean, book talk is a thing.
Makes a lot of money for the book industry. Yeah,
I
was going to say
book talk. Okay, I wondered that because, so basically for, if you don't know what book talk is, it's a basically like a sub community on TikTok, right? And it's all around books and reading spaces.
Basically every bookseller conference meeting, there's always a session that's like, are you on book talk? If you're not, you're losing money. You're leaving it on the table. I mean, for us, like our average demographic is like 3 to 10 years old we sort of miss out on that but I know lots of bookstores are making a lot of money on books that are popular on book talk and then they need a place to buy them, so it is definitely I think it's like one of the top drivers of book sales.
Book talk can quadruple sales of a title overnight.
That's like the Oprah effect back in the day.
But even like there's so many celebrities that have book clubs now, you know, and then as soon as they pick a book for their book club, it I mean, it's not as big as book talk, I don't think, but it can have a huge effect, impact, just like the Oprah effect.
Well, then it goes over to book talk probably too.
Right.
So Reese Witherspoon has a book club. Oprah, obviously. Dua Lipa. Florence Welch from Florence and the Machine.
I wonder if, because you say Reese Witherspoon, and I know that she is like a multimillionaire based on like
she makes movies from
she has a book club, but I'm pretty sure if my girlfriend's knowledge is correct that almost every book she reads that she likes she then turns into a mini series or a limited series and then makes millions off of it. Not to say that she's not reading them or anything, but I can see why some people are like there's something else going on there. I think that like for us when I was like I don't know college or freshly out, when a movie would come out that was based on a book, a lot of people would be like, I want to go see this movie because it's based on this book I read and I want to compare. And so I wonder now if it's the flip of that where it's like, oh, this really cool movie came out about this book. Let me go now read the book. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like this, I don't know, partnering.
It's like that a little bit because I think now some of it is just like trendy. So, you know, there's that. And there's also some, like someone has to lift the movie industry up some kind of way with, you know, creative writing. And it's like, oh, why hire writers? Let me just take this book.
This is book art,
You know, the author is like, all right, I'll sell my rights to do it. You know, that can be another headache for a producer.
It'll be based on the book.
Based off the book. And then some authors are like, whatever, pay me my money.
Well, they don't, you don't make money as an author. Unless you're big. Like, you're not making any money.
Right.
So to have your book turn into a movie,
you're like
oh, now I can be a writer only.
Like, look at Alice Walker. Like, we didn't have 50 iterations of Color Purple at this point, right?
Well, and I do feel like now there are people writing books
in hopes writing
which
the book tailored
that
to be a movie. That's kind of cheating.
Well, it's just we'll just write a script. Like you know what I mean? Like if that's what you're gonna do, then go do it that way, but don't waste everybody's time and it's like not a good book. You know,
Like
authors are very specific for that reason. Right. They write for that. You know.
Yeah.
And I do feel like the Reese Witherspoon Book Club does conveniently review the books, but then all of a sudden they're a movie. You already had that.
I think picked out there's something in the contract, like when she picks it out, they have to, she gets the option to make it.
When she like says, hey, I want this book in my book
and
club.
If you sign, and you sign like a thing, like, and then you get the, like she has first dibs to make it into something.
Yeah, it's very messy. I'm not a fan of it at all.
But what I do like about hers is, I actually did the Reese Witherspoon Book Club for 2 years. I mean, there's not an official meeting. But,
right.
but she picks all women authors. Mm-hmm. And it was like a New Year's resolution I had. I was like, I'm going to read more women authors. And I was searching on my own. And I was like, oh, wait, Reese Witherspoon has already picked them out for me. And I feel like she does a really great job of getting lots of diverse representation. Mm. Like when I was reading books, so many of them, I was like, I never would have picked this up. I never would have thought to read it. So
Romanticy. I feel like I've heard this topic come up a lot over the last couple months. So it's romance
and fantasy.
So like it's dragon romance.
One of the biggest growing genres. We actually have a romanticy bookstore here in Buffalo, Afterglow Books. And that
really?
All of their books are romanticy. Yeah, she's on Allen Street in Allentown.
Maybe that will get me back into
Is this different than like the old 90s Fabio? Like, is this different than that?
It's like Game of Thrones, right?
Fourth Wing is the big, like one of the big ones. Okay. It's dragons and romance.
Specifically like that.
Romance and fantasy.
I thought,
Do you think that's going to be like the new movie genre that comes from that?
Since, I mean they had like the teen romance thing and all of that. Twilight.
Twilight.
Yeah. Well, you got to think about who were the people who were reading those.
Oh, that's
how old
true.
Are they now? They're the Harry Potter readers, right?
No.
Like the Harry Potter readers grew up
and we're the parents now.
Harry Potter for grown-ups. And there is fan fiction. There's like Harry Potter fan fiction that's like skyrocketing too. It's like,
Because Harry Potter was like third or fourth grade for me, the first one. Twilight was around college, I think. And so now...
And now you're...
That
adult.
Is romantic. Crazy.
Romantic. That's wild.
Oh, my God.
So now...
For every stage of life, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So you're a children's bookstore, but you also have an adult book club, right?
Yeah, grown-up book club.
Grown-up book club.
Yes. I love that title.
We do.
Grown-up sounds better because adult sounds.
We had to
different adult
start
books.
From the very beginning with just grown-up books.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah, we do. We have an all-ages book club. We have a grown-up book club. We have Gliss actually runs a book club with us once a month, and it's for families, and they centered around a picture book.
That's awesome.
In 2026, we're launching a picture book club for grownups.
Hey.
So it's like grown-ups who have to read all these picture books but then notice all the cool things about them, and maybe their kiddo doesn't want to talk about it at bedtime, but you want to nerd out with other grown-ups about
it. So
cool. That's
way
cool.
So that's on the horizon for us too. Yeah.
So is there a sense of escapism with a lot of this, you know, especially now it seems like we know we should be reading nonfiction, we should be learning things, but also like there's a lot of heavy stuff going on. So there does seem to be like people creating this other reality.
There's a part of my life as a writer. I'm, you know, working on my own books, and I was in a workshop with an agent, and they were talking about trends in children's literature, and because of what's going on, you know, like, okay, so probably in the next few years, agents and editors are going to be looking for funny books, you know, and books that there's a little bit more escape, you know, but that's always been true, that our books, like if you look back at history, the books that have come out reflect what was happening. Even if you can't tell in the moment. Like right now, you might be like, why are all these romanticy books coming out?
And
then, you know, 50 years from now, they're going to be like, remember 2025.
So thank you all for this discussion. And I think it's really great to bring this back, you know, especially when we're talking about Reading Rainbow that started here at Buffalo Toronto Public Media, and then talking to Michael Threets, but also talking about what's going on in the community here and how we are carrying this on, because I feel like as a grown-ups like can I say adults? Is it adults or grown-ups?
you know, it is our job to keep that going. Mm-hmm. So what do you have coming up this weekend? Any events? Because I know you're all involved in great things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We just finished Dream Girls.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I have a little bit of a break this weekend. But yeah. We're working on a workshop with Jenna Parker. She's actually working on her own play. So we're working on doing a workshop for her, the first act of it. So awesome. Yeah, we're kind of getting that together. But I get to like relax a little this weekend.
Nice. Meg, going into your store started out as a bribe for my kid to behave at the zoo or something. I don't know, but I was like, we'll go look at books, you know, and then, you know, we've been sucked in. So I appreciate that. But you also do events there and then
we do. We have the Dogman Days, our big one. Yep. But actually the same day we have a new adventure story club, Buffalo. It's kind of like the Moth. Mm-hmm. But we've started. This is for grownups. A live open mic storytelling night that we're doing once a month.
I love that.
And so our next one is the same day as the Dogman release party, November 11th. And we host them at Fitz Books and Waffles on Main Street because we don't have the space in our store.
Oh,
so next week is a big week for us. And we actually have a great event. We're bringing our first ever Caldecott winning author and illustrator to Buffalo. And we're doing an event with the zoo in December. So their book is about zoo animals. And so we're doing a collaboration with the zoo.
That's awesome. So cool.
Be perfect spot.
I know. We're right across the street from the zoo. We got a capital.
You got it.
Yeah.
That
that's
partnership,
great.
Meg.
And Corey, I know you're in the school year, but also you have a million things going on. You're filming.
This season right now is like the prep season for. I got like a few projects I'm working on, and then a few projects I'm doing. I'm gonna be doing a show at Ujima. Which is gonna be dope. That's my old stomping ground. I ain't been on the stage in a minute, so
shout
we'll see if
Lorna.
I still got it right. Auntie. So that's gonna be really cool. And other than that, it's just like writing some scripts. I got some things I'm gonna try and get out, some original content I'm trying to get out there, so we'll see how that goes. Check out the Instagram to keep up with it, you know what I mean? You'll see the updates.
And then you keep educating us on compact civics and
I'm going to do it, man. Y'all got to look out for the American Revolution, Ken Burns documentary, man. That's going to be.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry.
We got something coming out to go along
too.
With that.
There's a
look
book
at that. You see what I'm saying? Full circle, baby. Yeah. Full circle.
We are learning. I've seen some video clips and your acting skills. I'm excited.
Of course, the bomb.
I know. I'm really excited. So.
Good.
Well, that wraps up today's episode of Group Chat for now. If you want to continue the conversation, make sure you follow us on Instagram at BTPMNPR. Also, check us out on the video podcast on Buffalo Toronto Public Media's YouTube channel. I'd like to thank my guests, Meg Howe, Corey McCants, Ayla Ansari Catillo, and Michael Threets. And the Group Chat team, producer Haley Hellenbrook, audio engineer and editor Rich Ells, technical director Bailey Krytov, social media associate Katie Daugherty, and production intern Samantha Heppel and Justin Schweitzberg, director of audio strategy SJ Velasquez, director of content Pat Kelly. I'm your host, Bentley. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.